Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast from GPB News. Today is Monday, June 17th. I'm Peter Biello. On today's episode, Georgia police officers will now need more training to become certified. The city of Savannah unveils a new monument to a woman who helped beautify the city. And a new novel is based on a real act of violence in Georgia that occurred more than a century ago. These stories and more are coming up on this edition of Georgia Today. New Georgia police officers will have to undergo nearly double the amount of training to become a certified officer. The state's Police Officer Standards and Training Council last week voted to increase the number of required training hours from 408 to about 800. Georgia had been among the states with the fewest required hours of training. The council's deputy director, Chris Harvey, says Georgia is now among the states that requires the most.
Things like driving, things like firearms, things like use of force, things like defensive tactics. It's time to put more emphasis where I think it needs to be.
It's Georgia's first update in police officer training hours in nearly two decades, and it comes amid nationwide scrutiny over policing that followed high-profile deaths and protests, including several in Atlanta. Savannah has unveiled a new fountain dedicated to a woman who is instrumental to beautification efforts in the hostess city of the South. GPB's Benjamin Payne reports.
Savannah's beauty is our duty. That was the motto of the late Mary Robinson Myrick. She was a driving force behind Georgia's first fragrance garden for the blind, which still stands today at Forsyth Park. About a mile south at Kavanaugh Park, dozens of Savannians came together on a hot and humid June afternoon for an unusual kind of countdown led by Mayor Van Johnson.
Three, two, one.
Let there be water.
This new 10-foot tall cast iron fountain flows in honor of Myrick, close to where she lived in Savannah's Ardsley Park neighborhood. Aptly named the Garden Keeper, the fountain features a sculpture of a woman in robes representing Flora, the goddess of flowers. Savannah Alderman Nick Palumbo represents Ardsley Park and City Council and spoke at the commemoration ceremony.
I'm sure that the neighborhood's founders, the Lattimores, which their original residence overlooks this very park, would be absolutely floored that their neighborhood creation over a century later would be so beloved and cherished by this community.
Fundraising for the fountain was spearheaded by the Ardsley Park Chatham Crescent Garden Club, which Mary Myrick herself founded just over 50 years ago. For GPB News, I'm Benjamin Payne at Kavanaugh Park in Savannah.
Voters across Georgia are heading to the polls tomorrow for the primary election runoff. GPB's Sarah Callis has more on what to expect.
Georgia voters living in U.S. Congressional District 14 in Northwest Georgia will get to choose if Democrat Clarence Boylock or Sean Harris will face off against incumbent Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene in November. Voters in West Georgia's District 3 will pick between two Republicans, former State Senate Majority Leader Mike Dugan and former Trump advisor Brian Jack. The winner will compete against Democrat Maura Keller in November to fill the seat of retiring Republican U.S. Representative Drew Ferguson. Both districts lean heavily Republican. And in Southwest Georgia's 2nd District, Republicans Chuck Hand and A. Wayne Johnson will compete for a spot on the November ballot against incumbent Democrat Sanford Bishop, who is favored to win. Four state House districts will also hold a primary runoff. Polls are open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis.
The sheriff in Savannah's Chatham County is hospitalized and in critical condition. The office of Sheriff John Wilcher gave no further details on his medical status in a statement yesterday and asked residents to respect his family's privacy. Wilcher won a special election in 2016 to replace the previous sheriff, Al St. Lawrence, who died in office. He was reelected in 2016 and 2020. The 79-year-old Republican faces Democrat Richard Coleman in the general election in November. Albany has a new $6 million general aviation terminal at Southwest Georgia Regional Airport. Local, state, and federal officials celebrated the project's completion at a ribbon-cutting ceremony today. The new terminal and a new $9 million hangar along with it replace aging facilities serving private airplane traffic in the region. The terminal and hangar were paid for by a combination of local, state, and federal funding, including more than $1 million in COVID-19 relief. The first brewpub in Savannah has closed its doors just 2 months after celebrating its 25th anniversary. Craft beer enthusiasts packed Moon River Brewing Company last night in its last hours of operation. The company's owner, John Pinkerton, gave no reason for the abrupt closure, but its location in the city's tourism-oriented historic district has faced commercial pressure from high-end hotel and residential projects. Moon River opened in 1998, with Pinkerton later serving as the founding president of the Georgia Craft Brewers Association. An icon of the state's poultry industry has died. Abbott Massey led the Georgia Poultry Federation from 1960 until 2009. As the top spokesman for the state's nationally leading poultry industry, he became a renowned lobbyist at the state capitol. In 2011, he told the University of Georgia he didn't think lobbyist was a bad word.
It's a matter of providing the right information at the right time to the right people. Mm-hmm. Who can make the decisions. And in fact, I tell people everybody's a lobbyist in some way, you know.
Earlier this month, four Georgia governors paid tribute to him in his hometown of Gainesville. His official obituary says he passed away on Friday. Published reports say he died following a battle with cancer. In 1915, an Atlanta man named Leo Frank was murdered by a mob who believed he was responsible for the murder of a woman named Mary Fagan. Anti-Semitism was at the root of the mob's fury. The new novel set in Atlanta at the time of the lynching and its aftermath focuses on five adolescent girls who are obsessed with Frank. It's called The Curators, and its author, Maggie Nye, joins me now.
Hi, thanks, Peter. It's great to be here.
You based your novel on the true story of Leo Frank. And while the novel doesn't go through each detail, you do make some important details known to your readers. What facets of the Leo Frank story did you really want your readers to know about so that they could fully understand what your main characters are obsessed with?
So in 1913, a factory worker at the National Pencil Factory named Mary Fagan, she was 1 month shy of 14, so she's a 13-year-old laborer, was murdered in the basement of the National Pencil Factory. In the sort of days and weeks following her murder, there were various suspects that the state and the police department investigated. And the biggest names that sort of emerged in that case were her Northern Jewish superintendent, Leo Frank, and also a Black janitor named Jim Conley. Conley ended up being the state's sort of star witness. Her death was also complicated by what was a probable sexual assault. So the kind of combination of a young, white, sort of virginally imagined laborer in this kind of newly industrializing South stirred up a whole bunch of anxiety in especially white men. And there was just this kind of media frenzy focused on both Jim Conley's Blackness and Leo Frank's Jewishness. Eventually, Frank was convicted of Mary Fagan's murder, and he was sentenced to death by hanging. His sentence was commuted by Governor Slayton at sort of the 11th hour, 2 days before he was sentenced to be hanged, and he was taken to a Milledgeville prison farm.
The reasons for the commutation are up for debate, but the mob was angry about the commutation, and they took what they saw as justice into their own hands, hanging him in the name of defending Mary Fagan's quote-unquote honor.
Yeah, and her honor is honor as a sort of euphemism for virginity and sort of white Southern womanhood and purity is sort of utmost importance to her story. I'm actually very interested in Mary Fagan and in sort of her inscrutability because of the way she's been mythologized as a figure of white Southern virginity. Even her headstone talks about how she was sort of a martyr and died defending her quote-unquote honor.
And what's fascinating in your book is that the group of five adolescent girls, 13, 14 years old, they are obsessed with Leo and what the newspapers say about Leo. They don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about Mary Fagan, even though you might imagine that they would identify with Mary more easily given their closeness and age. Why do you think they're so obsessed with Leo specifically?
I think that Leo is maybe a more appropriate avenue in the way that they're imagining it for this sort of nascent desire that they have. They do actually spend time thinking about Mary Fagan's position as a working woman. They have this sort of like naive understanding or maybe fantasy that a working girl has access to this whole adult sexual world. So I think it's a way for them to imagine themselves into a sexual life that is a more appropriate kind of avenue for their desires.
The girls in this book do something magical. They create a golem. One of your characters, Anna Wolf, really spends a lot of time interacting with the golem when he comes to life. She keeps the golem in an attic closet. Tell me about the golem's role in the story.
So he's not a traditional golem. He sort of has protective capacities. But more than that, he is the kind of product of their obsession and fantasy. So they construct this golem with the idea that he will look like Leo Frank, that they will produce a sort of Leo Frank that can be in communication with them, and that through doing this, they will have access to this absolute truth. And this is especially Anna's fascination that is denied to them, that they will know the true story.
The stories Anna had heard about the golem in folklore was that they eat, they grow, they become independent almost by themselves, and then they do kind of what you would wanted them to do almost magically. And she finds that she's kind of unprepared to deal with what is essentially like a tiny little monster made out of dirt who can't really do a whole lot.
Yes. They all have great hopes for this golem, you know, that he will sort of be the ticket to their ascendancy into knowledge, into understanding, into perhaps sexuality. But he's really quite limited. He can do things like say the word Nabisco because he eats a Nabisco wafer, sort of cookie. Anna, I think, sees the potential for him to be something more. She really does believe that somewhere in the core of him, there is kind of capital T truth. There is absolute knowledge that she can inhabit and sort of do the right thing. Because by the time we get to this point in the story, they've done a lot of the wrong thing.
The story certainly shifts when the golem appears. And for me as a reader, my attention was focused on, oh no, they have created something that they don't fully understand what is going to happen with this thing. And I'd be remiss if I gave it away in this interview. But it's a fascinating part of the story. And I appreciate you writing it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, Maggie Nye, author of The Curators, thank you so much for coming into the studio and speaking with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me here today.
In sports, Atlanta United is transferring star forward Yorgos Yakimakis. The team announced his move to Mexican side Cruz Azul yesterday. The two teams reportedly had been in talks for weeks. Atlanta United isn't disclosing terms of the deal, but multiple reports say it was for $10 million. Yakimakis has been instrumental in the Five Stripes offense since he joined the club before the 2023 season, starting 32 of 41 of his MLS regular season matches and recording 24 goals and 7 assists. And in baseball, the Braves face the Tigers this evening for the first of a three-game series at Truist Park. The Braves lost last night to the Tampa Bay Rays. Rookie pitcher Hurston Waldrop gave up 4 hits, 4 walks, and 7 runs over 3 2/3 innings. Waldrop's 13 earned runs allowed are the most charged to a Braves pitcher over their first 2 career appearances. Waldrop has been one of several relatively inexperienced hurlers they've tried in the rotation, and none have performed anywhere near what we're seeing from the veterans. To give you an idea, the quartet of Max Fried, Ronaldo Lopez, Charlie Morton, and Chris Sale have combined for a 23-10 record, and the Braves' record overall, 38-31. We can't assume Spencer Strider, had he not injured his elbow, would have turned all those losses into wins, but Braves fans nonetheless are well within their rights to miss him on the mound. On the mound tonight against the Tigers, Max Fried. And that is it for this edition of Georgia Today. If you want to learn more about any of these stories, visit our website, gpb.org/news. And if you haven't subscribed to this podcast, you might be missing out, so do it now. Subscribe and we'll pop up in your podcast feed tomorrow afternoon with all the latest news from Georgia. And if you've got feedback or a story idea we should know about, you should contact us. The best way to do that is by email. You can email georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.